It is a great pleasure to welcome Pulitzer Prize winning author Allison Lurie to our program. Her new book is called Words and Worlds, From Autobiography to Zippers. The new book is a collection of essays that span some 70 years of her life, beginning with recollections of her college years at Radcliffe during World War II, an era of wartime rations, from a wall of sexism where it was understood that Harvard was only for men. From offering a gleeful glimpse into Jonathan Miller's production of Hamlet to memorializing mentors and intimate friends such as the poet James Merrill, illustrator Edward Gorey, and the New York Review of Books editor Barbara Epstein. Lurie celebrates the creative artists who encouraged and inspired her, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Allison Lurie to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight.
Thank you.
What was it like for you to revisit some of these essays that you had written over the years?
Well, it was amazing. Some I had remembered very well, and others I'd almost forgotten. I mean, the one about zippers, I'd forgotten that I wrote about zippers, and I'd almost forgotten that I wrote about knitting. But it was fun to come across them because I'd done them fast and a long time ago.
It has been, as you say, the zipper is probably the only clothes fastener ever to have been the star of a Broadway show tune. They are very cool. And when do you think of, say, oh, okay, that's something I can write about. That's something that I can dig into.
Well, it happens when I notice something and I find that I'm talking to my friends about it. And sometimes their eyes kind of glaze over. But sometimes I say, really? Like with the knitting, I remembered that the thing called the sweater curse, that from my early years there was a superstition that if you knitted a sweater for your boyfriend, he would run away because he would know that you were trying to surround and envelop him. So you should resist this impulse, which a lot of my friends did have, and wait till you're married, and then it's perfectly okay to knit sweaters for your husband and your children and anybody you like. But men are afraid of being presented with sweaters.
It turned out, and
I asked around, and this was absolutely true.
You start off the book by talking, in fact, one of the first lines in the book is, over the years, many people have told you that they want to be a writer. That is a common thing I've heard from other writers, that people, that really anybody thinks they can be a writer, and that, of course, is far from the case.
Well, yes. I mean, I don't quite go along with that. I think anybody can write. There are lots of ways of writing, lots of places to publish. You might end up doing the local column for your small town and mentioning the Apple Festival and the child that is won a part in a Broadway show, and you know you're writing, you're enjoying it, but you're not creating great drama or poetry. There are many many ways to write, and they're all fun, really. Tax documents and so on, they're not fun.
But that's not fun.
But writing is fun, and it only ceases to be fun if you feel you've got to reach some high standard and you've got to make lots of money. It's easy to write words and get them published. It's very difficult to make millions of dollars.
What was it about writing that lured you into the profession of wanting to be a writer?
Well, it was because as a child I loved reading, and I noticed that some of the books I read were, in fact, the majority of them almost, were written by women. This was not true with any other profession that I could see. When I was a child, all grown-up jobs, almost all, were held by men. Your doctor was a man. The dentist was a man. The people in the store were men. You know, the teachers. Once you got out of elementary school, most of the teachers were men. So there didn't seem to be much scope for what did you want to be. I remember people would always ask me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the choices were very limited. You could be a secretary. You could be a nursery school teacher. You could be a nurse. But you couldn't be a boss. You couldn't be a professor. You couldn't be a doctor. So this was very limiting. But I realized you could be a writer. And since I love to tell stories, this seemed the ideal profession.
You left college in, 1948? But the first book wasn't published until the 1960s, the first novel.
That is true. I wrote two unpublishable novels, which I'm now terribly grateful were never published. But at the time, my heart was breaking. I didn't talk about it much because, as I said in the title of one of the pieces in this book, nobody asked me to write a novel. There was no pressure on me to write a novel. The pressure on me was to be nice and pretty and get good grades and find somebody to marry me and have babies, writing was just something you did for fun.
And then I assume you'll agree with this. I don't know if you'll agree with this, but it was around 1974, the war between the Tates, that was when people started to take notice of your work.
Well, I was lucky right from the beginning. Even my first novel, I didn't realize how unusual this was, but my first novel, Love and Friendship, was reviewed at length in the New York Times Book Review. Of course, there were many fewer writers then because fewer people thought that they could become writers or wanted to become writers. So it was much, much easier to get published than it is now when there's so many MFA classes and degrees and so many people feeling that they have a right to be published because they've gone to school and studied it.
Then in 1984, you won the Pulitzer Prize for Foreign Affairs.
85, actually.
85. How do you look
yeah.
at that? How do you look at that particular novel and think of it now?
Well, I think it's good, but I don't think it's incredibly much better than the other novels. But it had a couple of qualities that made it popular. One was, it was about a love affair among middle-aged people. I mean, at this time, it was almost uncalled for to have a heroine over 30. And I made my heroine 52 years old. And I invented somebody for her to fall in love with who is also over 50. And I wrote about it as if it was just as romantic and just as important as if they were 22 and 25. So this was nice, and I think that made it popular. What caused it to win the prize, I think, is that it had a fairly unhappy ending. You know, books that with which a lot of bad things happen tend to win prizes. I don't know why this is, but if one of your characters dies, that's a big help in winning prizes. because in fact, the world is a sad place, and people do die. All of us die. So if you write a book in which everything goes well, or more or less well, it's not taken as seriously.
You still like writing books, though, that where maybe nobody has to die, right? I mean, that's still okay to write that.
I would never write dystopian fiction, for instance. Books like The Handmaid's Tale in 1984.
Yeah.
I admire those books tremendously, but to spend 2 years, which is at least what a novel takes, with some things get worse and worse, and people are eaten by rats, and their children are murdered, and I mean, it's not fun to spend that much time with so much unhappiness and suffering, for me anyway. For some people, it is helpful. It's a way in which you can deal with unhappiness and suffering by writing about it. But for me, somehow it doesn't work.
When you were, of course, we, of course, are talking about the new book, Words and Worlds, From Autobiography to Zippers, and this is a collection of essays that have been written over the years. What compels you to write an essay? I assume some of them are asked for, and others you just do because you feel that you need to write about a certain subject.
Well, mostly the subject, I find the subject, and then I try to find somebody to print it. I don't think any of these were commissioned. No, I can't. Well, yes, the piece on James Merrill, for instance, I and a lot of other people were asked to contribute our memories of him. But mostly, I think of something I want to write about. There's another one, the Harvard one. I was asked to write about my years at Radcliffe.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly I think of the idea myself and then try to find somebody who will print it.
You have written children's books and you write a lot about children's books. What is it about children's literature that you find so fascinating?
Well, it's so simple and straightforward and not pretentious, and it doesn't advertise itself as great literature, though I think it very often is. The greatest children's writers are great literature, but they're not showing off. They're not trying to impress. They're trying to tell a good story and also maybe talk something about what it's like to live in this world.
In your work, in your children's books, have the subjects always come to you quite naturally?
Well, my children's books are not, they were just picture books. I had a friend named Monica Beisner, who's a wonderful illustrator, and she lives in England, and we collaborated on three picture books. One was pictures of imaginary animals that I'd been teaching about in a folklore course I was teaching at Cornell. And I mean, there's animals like the unicorn and the griffin and all these creatures that actually don't exist. She did wonderful paintings of them, and I wrote their histories and the stories there. And then we did another one about the stories of the constellations, like the Great Bear and the fishes and so on. And she did wonderful illustrations, and I retold the myth. So these were not children's books of the kind that I admire and wish I could write, but I've never been able to do that myself.
Well, this collection is just lovely. It's called Words and Worlds, From Autobiography to Zippers, and it is out and published by Delphinium Books. Allison Lurie, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you for inviting me.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Allison Lurie's latest is Words and Worlds, From Autobiography to Zippers. The book is published by Delphinium. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.